Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, December 16th, 2020. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, City Council Approves Small Business Grant Program, by Caitlin Randall. The Midland City Council on Tuesday budgeted $1 million to assist small businesses affected by the coronavirus pandemic. The creation of a grant program using part of the $7.9 million in federal CARES Act funding the city received was approved in a 5-2 vote. Up to 963 businesses will receive $10,000 grants to be used for payroll for employees, rent, health care, benefits, reimbursement for lost revenue, and expenses such as personal protective equipment. Council members Spencer Robnett and Michael Trost voted against the item on Tuesday. Robnett said he disagreed with an across-the-board $10,000 grant rather than basing the amount on need, while Trost said he opposed amendments that were made. Before a vote on the initiative, Councilmember Lori Blong added an amendment for the funds to be approved in $250,000 increments. The item was also amended to require businesses to provide 2019 tax returns and 2020 financial documents. The first phase of funding was approved Tuesday, and any amount beyond that $250,000 will need additional council approval, though $1 million was budgeted for the program. There are other nonprofits and foundations and people who are paying attention to the same things we're paying attention to, and they're going to be allocating funds, Blong said during Tuesday's meeting. One of the things I've heard from foundation directors is don't allocate all your funding right now. You need to see where things shake out and what needs arise. Blong said she was in favor of approving the funds in tranches so the city could easily redistribute the money if needed or if fewer businesses apply for the program than expected. To be eligible, businesses would need to employ 20 or fewer employees, be current on all fees owed to the city, and not have declared bankruptcy in the last year. The program originally was limited to businesses that had not received any other COVID-19 economic assistance, but that was changed Tuesday to allow those businesses to apply as well. The program was modeled after the City of Odessa Business Assistance Program, which was approved in August. Businesses in Odessa can receive grants that range from $2,500 to $10,000. Midland's program is in partnership with the Midland College Business and Economic Development Center. Midland College will vet applicants, while the City of Midland will make grant award decisions. This article is entitled, Booker Upsets Fuller, Joyner Wins in District 4, by Stuart Doreen. Michael Booker pulled off an upset in the Midland ISD District 1 runoff, knocking off the man first elected to the seat in 1988. Booker will represent East Midland on the board after defeating James Fuller in the runoff Tuesday night. Booker collected 312 votes compared to Fuller's 225 to claim the seat Fuller has held over parts of four different decades. Booker's win highlighted a night when the two second-place finishers in the general election more than 1 month ago turned the tables on those claiming first place. Not only did Booker defeat Fuller, but Katie Joyner avenged her second-place finish on November 3rd, collecting 267 to top Steve Vargas's 213 in District 4. Booker and Joyner will join Robert Marquez, District 2, Tommy Bishop, District 3, John Trischitti III, District 5, Rick Davis, District 6, and Brian Murray, District 7, on the next board. District 1 in East Midland is bordered by Loop 250 to the north and includes areas around the following campuses: Milam Elementary, Lee Freshman High School, Pease Communications and Technology, Coleman High School, General Tommy Franks Elementary, the former Crockett Elementary, Washington STEM Academy, and Carver Center. Fuller has served as the representative of District 1 since he was first elected in 1988. District 4 starts in Central Midland, near Bowie Fine Arts Academy, and works its way across the city, picking up neighborhoods around Sam Houston Collegiate Preparatory Academy, Midland Alternative Program, Lamar Elementary, Long Elementary, Burnett Elementary, and then works its way into Southwest Midland and into the county. John Kennedy is currently the representative, but he decided not to seek another term. This article is entitled Midland Police Department is Investigating Shooting Death, from Staff Reports. Midland Police Department is investigating the shooting death of a 20-year-old man, according to a press release from the city's spokeswoman. Santonio Griffin died at Midland Memorial Hospital late Monday night after sustaining a gunshot wound to the chest, according to the release. Officers were dispatched to Midland Memorial Hospital in reference to Griffin's injuries shortly after officers responded, at 10:23 p.m., to a shots-fired call at DK Convenience Store in the 700 block of West Scarborough Drive. The investigation is ongoing. Anyone who has any information on the incident should call the MPD non-emergency line at 432-685-7108 in reference to case number 2012-14053. This article is entitled Arrington's Ansel Adams Pictures Sell for $6.433 million, from Staff Reports. Sotheby's reports that David Arrington's collection of Ansel Adams pictures sold for $6.433 million. The auction on Monday had included 123 pictures from the Midland Oilman's collection of more than 650 Adams photographs. Sotheby's called Arrington's collection the holy grail of Ansel Adams' collection, and that it represented one of the most significant and impressive private collections of Adams' work in the world. The top seller, according to Sotheby's website, was the Grand Tetons and the Snake River from Grand Teton National Park, Wyoming. It sold for $988,000. Moonrise, Hernandez, New Mexico, and Half Dome, Merced River, Winter Yosemite Valley, each sold for $685,000. Winter Sunrise, Sierra Nevada from Lone Pine, California, sold for $403,200, and Clearing Winter Storm from Yosemite National Park, California, sold for $327,600. This article is entitled Total Cases in Midland County Top 12,000, from Staff Reports. The Midland Health Department reported Tuesday that the total number of COVID-19 cases in Midland County have topped 12,000 during the pandemic. The Health Department showed Tuesday that the number of confirmed cases moved to 9,587. However, another 136 unconfirmed cases were reported from Monday. That increased the number of unconfirmed cases going back to November 21st to 2,434, and the total number of cases, confirmed and unconfirmed, to 12,021. Unconfirmed cases are reflective of the number of positive test results received from testing locations. The patients have been notified by the testing location of the results. However, the patients have not been contacted by the Midland Health Department yet to confirm residency, gather their close contacts, or advise them on guidelines, according to the city. Previous reported Telegram articles show the number of cases topping 10,000 on November 30th and 11,000 on December 7th. The city also confirmed Tuesday that the 171st Midland County resident died of COVID. A man in his 90s with underlying health conditions died Tuesday. He was being treated at Manor Park. This is the coronavirus page. This article is entitled, Region is 2 days away from lifting of restrictions, by Stuart Doreen. For the fifth straight day, the region that includes Midland remained below 15% when it came to the percentage of COVID-19 patients in the hospital compared to the total number of patients. Should that percentage stay below 15% in the region for another 2 days, then state-imposed restrictions on businesses, including restaurants and bars, will be lifted, according to Governor Greg Abbott's executive order. At that point, businesses, including restaurants, would be allowed to return to 75% occupancy. Day 5 showed a rise in the percentage from 14.24 to 14.54%, according to numbers released Tuesday afternoon. Midland Memorial Hospital statistics. There wasn't much of a change in Midland Health's daily statistics. The number of COVID critical care unit rooms occupied dropped to 20, or 65% of the unit. The number of rooms in the hospital occupied, COVID or otherwise, moved to 253, or 86% of the total rooms, and the percentage of those occupied by COVID patients dropped from 28 to 27%. It was the fifth straight day in Midland that the percentage stayed below 30%. One metric that saw a day-to-day uptick was positivity of those testing at Midland Health facilities. Of the 214 who tested through Monday, 29.9% tested positive, up from 25.5%.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Wednesday, December 16, 2020. On the screen, Midland Festival Ballet performed scenes from the Nutcracker, December 7, 2019, at Museum of the Southwest during Christmas at the Mansion. MFB has brought its annual production to the big screen, rather than on stage, with the Nutcracker reimagined. MFB reimagines the Nutcracker. Midland Festival Ballet is taking the 27th annual production of the Nutcracker to the big screen, with a film produced by Film Hunter Media. The Nutcracker reimagined features 50 local dancers. There are three options to see the film. The Nutcracker Reimagined will be shown at the Big Sky Drive-In, 7:30 p.m. Friday. Tickets are $6 for 6 and older. Families can stream film at home. Tickets are $30 to see the film as many times as viewers would like, between Sunday and December 31. Basin PBS will air The Nutcracker Reimagined at 8:30 p.m. December 23. Tickets are available at www.midlandfestivalballet.org. For more information, email Rachel Carr Ritter at rritter@midlandfestivalballet.org. High Sky Wing to host Christmas Lights Flights. The Commemorative Air Force's High Sky Wing is hosting the 7th annual Christmas Lights Night Flights through December 23. Flights on C-45 Spirit of West Texas are scheduled every 30 minutes, beginning at 6 p.m. The last flight is at 9:30 p.m. Flights depart from the CAF High Sky Wing Hangar at Midland International Air and Space Port. Tickets are $75 a person, 4 seats per flight, $145 for the co-pilot seat, and $395 for all 5 seats, according to High Sky's website. Riders must be 5 years or older. All children under 12 must be accompanied by an adult. Passengers must be able to enter and exit the aircraft under their own mobility. To book a flight, email rides@highskywing.org or text 254-6182. Include phone number, requested dates and time, and number of seats needed. Jumbarito hosts WTFB fundraiser. The West Texas Food Bank is partnering with Jumbarito for the Give Yourself. The restaurant chain has pledged to donate 50 cents for each Jumbarito Revolutionary Rewards card visit through Thursday, which will provide 2 meals to a person in need, according to a press release from WTFB. During this time, each customer who presents their rewards card will be entered into a drawing for 1,000 reward points. Jumbarito is operating through call-in orders picked up curbside and drive-through. Miss Casey's giving away free ornaments. Miss Casey's Wonderland will not be having personal visits from Santa Claus this year. Instead, free Christmas ornaments will be given to boys and girls co-owner Becky McCraney said. The ornaments will be available until the store runs out, but there is an ample supply, co-owner Becky McCraney said. Parents or kids can ask for the free ornaments, and it can be personalized with names, she said. Miss Casey's Wonderland, 1012 Enders Highway, is open 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday, and from 2 to 5 p.m. Sunday. 2020 Holiday Shipping Dates. Recommended send-by dates for expected delivery before December 25. USP Retail Ground Service, December 15. First Class Mail Service, December 18. Priority Mail Service, December 19. Priority Mail Express Service, December 23. Source, United States Postal Service. Library has Wizard of Oz, Route 66 exhibits. The Midland County Public Library Centennial Branch is hosting Wizard of Oz educational exhibit through Saturday, and the downtown branch will display America's Road, the journey of Route 66 through January 4. The exhibits will be cleaned multiple times a day, and visitors must wear masks or face coverings. The branches are open 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. weekdays and 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturdays. Midlander joins State Plumbing Board. Midlander James Ron Ainsworth, a licensed master plumber and CEO of the Bosworth Company, was one of six appointed to the Texas State Board of Plumbing Examiners by Governor Greg Abbott. He will serve a term that expires September 5, 2023. Joining Ainsworth on the board are William Bill Clock of Austin and Mark Savasta of Houston. In addition, Abbott named Frank Denton of Conroe chair of the board. Denton, Calvin Chip Dents of Victoria, and T. Justin McDonald of Kerrville will serve terms that expire September 5, 2025.
This is the opinion page. This column is entitled "Vaccine Messengers Need to Do Their Job" by Megan McCardle, Washington Post Writers Group. I am not the weepy kind, and prior to Thursday, I had cried from happiness only twice in my life. On the day I got a job after 2 years of unemployment, and on the day I married my husband. Then my mother called me just as I finished watching the live stream proceedings of a Food and Drug Administration advisory panel that had met to consider Pfizer-BioNTech's application for emergency approval of their COVID-19 vaccine. "They did it," I told her, and to my surprise, my voice broke and my eyes teared up. "They voted to give us the vaccine." Sorry for getting maudlin, but as you well know, it has been a long 9 months. The FDA duly followed suit over the weekend and authorized the vaccine for emergency use, which means it's time to start preparing ourselves for the reality of a vaccine. It's going to be amazing, but also it's going to be unpleasant. The unpleasantness is how we get to the amazing part, but if we're not ready for it, it could instead derail us. As my colleague Leanna Nguyen has explained, the side effects of these vaccines can be considerable. Many people will feel pretty sick for a day or two. That's actually a good sign, because those side effects are your immune system running practice exercises against the dummy viral proteins. When the enemy actually shows up, your highly trained warrior cells will be ready to go all William Tecumseh Sherman on the virus. But if the public isn't prepared for the rigors of this training, panic stories will circulate about the vaccines making healthy people sick. We got a foretaste of this when Britain announced that a couple of healthcare workers had allergic reactions during the first round of shots, and social media lit up. Even though allergic reactions to vaccines are not uncommon, Pfizer-BioNTech had indicated the small but significant risk in their application, and both incidents involved people who already carried EpiPens because of a history of allergies. Moreover, both people were quickly treated and, when last reported, were recovering well. Another risk is simply statistical. Even if we were just giving millions of people a harmless shot of pure saline, some number of them would die of a heart attack or stroke or suicide or cancer a short time after their inoculation. Inevitably, some of their loved ones will conclude post hoc, ergo propter hoc, The shot preceded the death, therefore the shot must have caused the death. And take to social media to rail against vaccines. Wen sensibly suggests that we need to combat this with better education. What worries me is that we're not already doing this in the sustained way we need to build public trust in the vaccine. And more importantly, to maintain it after we start injecting people and the downsides become apparent. We should already have heard about these risks so often that we're bored of the discussion. When nurses start to give the warning, people should cut them off. I know, flu-like symptoms, allergic reactions, don't freak out. People who are bored with hearing it from public officials and journalists will be equally bored by overexcited rumors spreading on social media. But three things stand in the way of getting that message across as cleanly as we need to. Or rather, three groups of people. Public health officials have too often taken a mama knows best approach that sometimes involves the strategic omission of salient facts. The early warnings against using masks, which were needed for frontline healthcare workers, are of course the most famous example. Though the World Health Organization's travel bans don't work edict deserves an honorable mention. The attitude behind both remains prevalent, and I'm worried experts will once again give in to the temptation to manage public perceptions by downplaying the side effects. This might well backfire as disastrously as their early attempts at n-dimensional psychological chess. Politicians, meanwhile, would very much like to tell you about the fantastic life-saving vaccine being handed out. They'd rather not dwell on how miserable these vaccines might make you feel for a day or so. So I'm worried that they'll undersell the downsides and that dissatisfied customers will take their revenge. Then there's my profession, which could do an immense public service if we were willing to ignore the incessant demands of our audience for novelty and just keep hammering the same points home over and over. There would be no reward for this sacrifice except the quiet satisfaction of a job well done. No one is ever going to thank us for boring them. I wish I could say that I'm confident we'll all do the right thing. But after the past year, my confidence in American institutions is at a pretty low ebb. On the other hand, after last week, I've at least remembered how to hope. This column is called Our View. It is entitled, Let's Continue Adhering to Measures That Keep Down Hospitalizations, by editor Stuart Doreen. Monday should have been a day when Midland County residents could be optimistic that the community had turned the corner when it came to the latest COVID spike. The Department of State Health Services reported a fourth straight day of COVID hospitalization numbers below a state standard. 15% occupancy of COVID patients in the region's hospital. If the region could post three more days below 15%, the state restrictions that lowered occupancies in businesses from 75 to 50% would be lifted. The hard work by so many seemed to be close to paying off. But not long after the state issued its report, the city offered a cruel reminder that there would not be a victory celebration on Monday. Nine new COVID-19-related deaths was the subject line of the City of Midland email. The email then rattled off the reality of COVID-19. With deaths number 162, 163, 164, 165, 166, 167, 168, 169, and 170. If one is too many, what is 170? I believe it is a grim reminder of what we were up against. Monday was not the first time our headlines changed during an afternoon. COVID has proven so formidable that it has left the best of us second-guessing ourselves. Just ask Midland Mayor Patrick Peyton. Where I have gotten myself into trouble and where we as a community have maybe assumed we are more out of the woods than we thought, Peyton said last week. Possibly a reference to his Midland is open for business comment in September. His tone during a unified command meeting last night was more respectful of the enemy. We ought to stay more vigilant the longer we go through the holidays. We are not out of those woods yet. We are probably about to enter those wintry woods of Christmas time. Again, that is showing respect. Still, the numbers are trending to a more open Midland County. They are also trending to a hospital not as impacted by COVID. The percentage of COVID patients this past week fell below 30% of the general population for the first time in nearly a month. When it comes to occupancy of COVID rooms, current numbers are trailing 7-day averages. Lastly, the percentage of those testing positive is on pace to go down for the fourth straight week. For a community tired of coronavirus, it is welcome news. For some of us, that drop is what we have been hoping for all this time. It really doesn't matter how it came about, mask ordinance or personal responsibility, because the drop means less pressure on the front line at Midland Memorial. Those doctors, nurses, and other staff deserve a break. We all deserve a break. Business owners, students and teachers, the older residents in the community, those with underlying health conditions, all of us. Are we getting closer to vaccines? It appears so. Until then, let's continue doing those things that keep people out of the hospital and out of city press releases. Wear a mask to protect yourself and others, socially distance, avoid crowded areas, and be respectful of the virus that is still very present in Midland. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, December 16th. Eddie Ritchie Moreno. Eddie Ritchie Moreno, 55, of Big Spring, passed away Friday, December 11th in a Houston hospital. Funeral services will be 2 p.m. Wednesday, December 16th at the Family Faith Center with Reverend Samuel A. Segundo, Jr. officiating. Interment will follow at Trinity Memorial Park. He was born December 24, 1964, in La Mesa, Texas, to Jesus and Lupe Moreno. Survivors include his wife, Olivia Moreno, three children, Edgar Moreno and wife, Danielle, Elgin Moreno and wife, Crystal, and Emmeline Beltran and husband, Patrick. Eight grandchildren, two sisters, Evie Moreno Gonzalez and A.B. Cerda, several nieces and nephews, his loving companion, Danae, and his granddogs, Bella and Lily. He was preceded in death by his parents, his mother-in-law and father-in-law, Ramon and Blanca Valenzuela. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Picklin Wells Funeral Home and Crematory. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Edward Kyle Russell III. Edward Kyle Russell III was born September 1, 1942, in Clarksville, Texas, to Josephine Bowers and E.K. Russell, Jr. Kyle is preceded in death by his parents and his brother, Gene Russell. He is survived by his wife, Janet, son, Kirk Russell, his wife, Kelly, son, Justin Russell, and his wife, Diane, two grandchildren, his sister, Ann Russell Evitz and Doug Evitz, his first wife, Sylvia Fodge Russell. He is also survived by stepdaughters, Mary Foster DeSimone and Jennifer Foster, and Mary's daughter, Sarah. If desired, memorial contributions may be sent to the following: the Mission Fund at TWUMC Foundation at the Woodlands United Methodist Church, 2200 Lake Woodlands Drive, The Woodlands, Texas, 77380, or the National Parks Conservation Association, 777 6th Street Northwest, Suite 700, Washington, D.C., 20001. Due to the need for limited gatherings because of health concerns, there will be a family memorial service at the Woodlands United Methodist Church on December 18th at 11 a.m. The service will be live streamed on the following link: https://www.youtube.com/watch?y=5Sxdewq4. Lucio H. Madrid. Lucio H. Madrid, passed away December 13th. Visitation will be held Tuesday, December 15th from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held Wednesday, December 16th at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home Chapel. He is preceded in death by Nicolas Madrid and Maria Dolces Nombres Madrid. He leaves to cherish his memories his wife Maria Guadalupe Madrid, daughters Maya Elizabeth Ramirez and husband Daniel Ramirez, Leticia Madrid, son Asabel Madrid and wife Patricia Elizabeth Madrid, 10 grandchildren, brothers Graziano Madrid, Norberto Madrid, Dario Madrid, Rodolfo Madrid, sisters Juliana Madrid, Delfina Jurado, Maria Cirillo Madrid, Sabina Santos Madrid. Funeral services are entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Maria de Los Angeles Medellin Vasquez. Maria de Los Angeles Medellin Vasquez passed away on Sunday, December 13th. A visitation will be from 6 to 8 p.m. Friday, December 18th at Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home. There will be a graveside service at Rest Haven Memorial Park on Saturday, December 19th at 11 a.m. Maria was born on August 12, 1943, in Musquis, Mexico, to Carlos and Antonio Medellin. She is survived by her daughters, Elva M. Vasquez, Diana V. Sullins, and husband, Dale Sullins, son, Eddie Vasquez, 5 grandchildren, 2 great-grandchildren, sisters, Maria Alonso, Elva Lopez, and Blanca Reyes. She is preceded in death by her parents, husband Irineo Vasquez, son Daniel Vasquez, and daughter Rosie Ella Vasquez, brothers Juan, Felix, Jose, and Heriberto Medellin, and sisters Paulina Garcia and Rosa Rivas. The family would like to express sincere gratitude to Midland Memorial Hospital staff. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Matthew Van, October 6, 1970 to December 10, 2020. The dash between these dates is much too small to encompass the spirit of Matthew Van. It's difficult enough to compress someone's life into a few paragraphs, but with a life as big and full as Matt's, it's fully impossible. For many of us, his passing left a hole that will never be filled and a hurt that will never stop. Despite that, we are deeply grateful for the time we had with him. He was such a thoughtful, honest, witty, wonderfully profane, half-cracked eccentric, a truly good man. He encouraged living a life so full there would be no room for regret at the end. His lesson for us is this. You have enough time now to make sure you have no regrets, so don't wait. Learn something new. Take that trip you've been putting off. Buy that big kid toy you've always wanted. Tell your friends how much they mean to you. Hold your loved ones close. Make good memories every day. Don't wait. Do it now, because you'll never know when you can't. We invite you to join us in celebrating Matt's life. Memorial service is to be held at 3 p.m. Monday, December 21st at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel, 3800 North Big Spring Street, Midland. A celebration of Matt's life will take place at the branch building beside the chapel immediately following the service. We would really like you to share your best memories of Matt at the celebration. For friends and family who would like to participate, a Divine Mercy Chaplet would be said in the chapel at 2:30 p.m. prior to the beginning of the service. In lieu of flowers, please consider donating to Hope House or Hospice of Midland. Everyone who remembers Matt is asked to celebrate his life in their own way. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Olga Enriquez. Olga Enriquez, 69, of Midland, passed away on December 1, 2020. Olga was born in Midland on December 9, 1950, to the late Isidro and Julia Rodriguez. She married Severo Enriquez on July 3, 1971. They were married for 49 years. Olga is survived by her spouse, Severo Enriquez, children Margaret Pester, Letty Johnson, and Rosie Enriquez, brother Isidro Rodriguez, and numerous grandchildren, nieces, and nephews, and other family friends. Olga is celebrated in death, preceded in death by her parents Isidro and Julia Rodriguez, her son Severo Raul Enriquez, and brother Paul Morales. In lieu of flowers, the family wishes you consider making a memorial donation to Olga to St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. The rosary will be held on Wednesday, December 16th at 7 p.m., followed by the funeral service on Friday, December 18th at 10 a.m., both at St. Anne's Catholic Church in Midland. Stephen Blake Carter. Stephen Blake Carter, 72, of Midland, passed away on December 12th at Midland Memorial Hospital. Stephen was born on April 20th, 1948, to Walter and Anna Imogene Carter in Refugio, Texas. He married Judy K. Arnold on February 18th, 1967. He is survived by his spouse, Judy K. Carter of Midland, two children, Sean Carter of Midland, Shaylin Robinson and husband Mark of Rio Vista, Texas, one granddaughter, Natalie Robinson, and one grandson, Chance Robinson, and four siblings, Linda Bolden, Daniel Carter, Ted Carter, and Thomas Carter, two brothers-in-law, Jimmy Arnold and Johnny Arnold, and numerous nieces and nephews. He is preceded in death by his parents, Walter Earl Carter and Anna Imogene Carter. Visitation will be held on Wednesday, December 16th from 6 to 8 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home in Midland. Funeral services will be on Thursday, December 17th at 1 p.m. at West Kentucky Baptist Church with Brother Bob Porterfield officiating. Burial will take place at American Heritage Cemetery. Death notices. Fernando Reyes. Fernando Reyes, 54, of Midland, passed away Thursday, December 10th. Viewing will be at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel on Wednesday, December 16th from 12 p.m. to 9 p.m. Prayer service will also be held Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. A funeral service will be held at Iglesia Bautista Betel on Thursday, December 17th at 10 a.m. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. He is survived by his wife, Petra Reyes, son, Ricky Reyes, two daughters, Evelina Reyes and Samantha Reyes, his mother, Candelaria Reyes, two brothers, one grandchild, and numerous nieces, nephews, and cousins. Jesus Rodriguez. Jesus Rodriguez, 73, passed away December 14th. Visitation will be held Thursday, December 17th from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. In keeping with Jesus' wishes, cremation services have been arranged. Survivors include his wife, Heladina Rodriguez, daughter Raquel Delayo, son Francisco Rodriguez, two sisters and two brothers. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Melvin Owen Penny. Melvin Owen Penny, 87, of Midland, passed away on Saturday, November 21st. A memorial service will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, December 19th at Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home Chapel. The service will be live-streamed at https://livestream.com/npw. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home and Crematory. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Patricia Estep. Patricia Estep, 66, of Midland, passed away December 11th. The family will plan a service next year. Survivors include mother Laverne Bass, daughter Wendy Torrance, four grandchildren and seven great-grandchildren, and four siblings. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Ramona Montez. Ramona Montez passed away on Sunday, December 6th. Visitation will be held Wednesday, December 16th from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. A rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. at Stanton Memorial Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral services will be held Thursday, December 17th at 11 a.m. at Stanton Memorial Funeral Home Chapel. Interment will follow at St. Joseph's Catholic Cemetery. She leaves to cherish her loving memory, her daughters Joanna Ramos, Josie Flores, son Jesse Montez, 10 sisters and 5 brothers. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Stanton Memorial Funeral Home. Robert Bob Calvin Turner. Robert Bob Calvin Turner of Greenwood passed away. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday, December 18th at Natalie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, December 19th at Greenwood Baptist Church, with burial following at Greenwood Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Natalie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
This is Connie reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, December 16th, 2020. Looks like an Odessa sweep. The caption reads, City Council at Large candidate Denise Swanner hugs Jolene Hawkins after finding out her lead in the early voting results on Tuesday night at the Ector County Republican headquarters. City Council has big changes coming in 2021. By Odessa News at OAOA.com. A particularly nasty campaign season is finally over, and Odessa has a new mayor and 2 new faces on the Odessa City Council. In the race for mayor of Odessa, Javier Hoven defeated outgoing District 2 Councilman Dewey Bryant, 3,662 to 2,277. Early voting showed Hoven with 2,519, or 61.63% of the vote, to Bryant's 1,568, or 38.37%. Hoven, following the early election results, said Odessans wanted change. Overwhelming. And let me tell you, many people looked at this as an improbable victory. But with the help of God and volunteers, we worked hard, and the people of Odessa have casted a vote for a resounding change, Hoven said. In the at-large race, newcomer Denise Swanner overwhelmingly defeated current mayor David Turner by more than 2-1, with a whooping 4,191 votes to Turner's 1,728 votes. In early voting, Swanner pulled away with 2,863 votes, or 70.27%, to Turner's 1,211 votes, or 29.73%. In District 1, newcomer Mark Mehta beat incumbent Michael Shelton Sr. with 471 votes to 269 votes. Mehta also had a solid lead in early voting of 333 votes, or 61.33%, to Sheldon's 210 votes, or 38.67%. This year's campaign was marked by all-around unpleasantness over everything from the current mayor's tax troubles to the cost of 2 Christmas trees in downtown Odessa. Social media posts have slammed both Turner and Bryant for items including spending $80,000 on the 2 Christmas trees to the handling locally of COVID-19 and a deal struck 3 years ago that helped locate the Marriott and the Convention Center in downtown Odessa. The sites and paid ads in local publications, including the Odessa American, repeatedly criticized Turner and Bryant.
Turner for unpaid taxes and federal tax liens, and Bryant for what the sides called his bank's involvement in a Ponzi scheme. Recent indictments, however, showed that the Ponzi scheme was hatched by people who did not work for Bryant's Southwest Bank. In fact, Southwest Bank is listed as a victim in the scheme in the recent indictments. Bryant is the outgoing District 2 councilman, and Turner is the outgoing mayor of Odessa. Both Turner and Bryant termed out of their current seats and were seeking other city offices. Hoven is a former councilman in District 5 from 1996 to 1999, who resigned prior to the end of his term. He later ran in 2010, but lost to Dean Combs. Turner and Swanner sought the at-large council seat, while the District 1 race was between Mata and Shelton, who was appointed earlier in the year by the city council after Councilman Malcolm Hamilton abruptly resigned. Swanner said she is looking forward to family time now that the election is over and ready to look closely at the city's budget. Mata, after getting early voting totals, said all the hard work that everyone put in for this race has been accumulation to that day. It's been bittersweet. All the people that I've met and have the help that I got came to this, so it's a huge weight that's off. You can take a big breath and finally enjoy it. And he said the last month has been busy with getting out and phone calls. Results from Midland County, which is where City of Odessa residents who live in Midland County vote, voted 213 for Bryant and 103 for Hoven. Turner gathered 127 votes to Swanner's 188. The runoff election was called because candidates failed to garner 50% of the vote plus one, which is required to be declared the winner. On November 3rd, Bryant received 43% of the vote, and Hoven snared 40% of the vote during the general election. In the at-large council race, Turner claimed 45% of the vote, and Swanner garnered 29%. Turner has served two terms as mayor, and Swanner is a newcomer to local politics. In District 1, Mata picked up 44% of the vote, and Shelton received 19%. Only Odessan Stephen Thompson won his race in November when he defeated Rachel Miner for the District 2 seat. Thompson received 55% of the vote, Miner 45%. Have a holly jolly Christmas. The caption reads, physical therapist assistant Pam Fierro, dressed as Santa, fist bumps 3-year-old Miguel Balarama as they drive through the Permian Basin Rehabilitation Center's Winter Carnival on Tuesday afternoon. Each year, the PBRC hosts a winter carnival as a Christmas present for all of their patients. This year, the carnival was moved outdoors where patients and families could drive through to help prevent the spread of COVID-19. Headlines still from the front page. Capacity ordinance could be lifted Friday. Medical pros caution Odessaans not to relax, by Frederico Martinez. A controversial ordinance limiting Odessa businesses to 50% capacity and requiring all employees and customers to wear face coverings while inside businesses is expected to lift on Friday, Mayor David Turner said Tuesday. Turner said the ordinance will be discontinued if the number of coronavirus patients taking up bed space in Ector County remains under 15% for 7 continuous days, which would be Thursday. The rates had soared as high as 23.95% when Turner signed the November 24th ordinance. The rates have been just under 15% for the past 5 days, Turner said during a Tuesday press conference with local health officials. The public listened and did what they were supposed to do. That was the key. I'm very proud of our residents. Odessa Dr. Timothy Benton, the Associate Dean for the Clinical Affairs at the Texas Tech Health Science Center Medical School, applauded the city's effort but cautioned residents not to become lax. "There's a lot of positives going on right now," Benton said. "We're seeing a plateau as far as hospital census. We've seen no post-Thanksgiving spike. But our commitment to wearing masks and social distancing cannot go away. We must stay the course." Local hospital officials say they are still expecting their first shipment of COVID-19 vaccinations on December 21st. Most Texas communities received their first shipments on Monday, but a state computer glitch caused a delay for Odessa. There is still some concern because some communities, like Midland, were expecting their vaccine shipment to arrive Monday, but it hasn't arrived yet. Medical Center Hospital Chief Nursing Officer Christian Timmons said. Timmons and Odessa Regional Medical Center Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohith Saravana said when the vaccine arrives, their hospitals will begin offering them in stages to all hospital employees. The vaccinations will be staggered over several weeks so that if there are any adverse reactions, it won't wipe out all of our staff, Timmons said. Vaccinations for hospital employees are recommended but won't be required, Timmons and Saravana said. "Even though vaccinations will start soon, I want to caution people that we're not going to see any effects from them for a good amount of time, 1 to 2 months, Saravana said. "The light at the end of the tunnel is getting brighter, but we need to hold tight to what we're doing." ORMC reported that they had 29 COVID-19 patients on Tuesday, 14 in critical condition, and 6 on ventilators. MCHS reported 83 patients, with 23 in critical condition or on ventilators. 320 days. For 320 days, the city has fought a lawsuit brought by the Odessa American to enforce the state law that guarantees the public's right to see basic police records. Through December 4th, the city has spent $87,490.99 of taxpayers' dollars to fight releasing information on crime in Odessa. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 10,880. Ector County negative, 36,740 out of 48,149 tested, with 529 pending. 160 deaths. Recovered, 9,103. Active, 1,617. ECISD daily cases, 12 students, 7 staff. U.S. cases, 16,317,000 1,892 total confirmed and 300,032 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.txt.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/tztrjlf. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/y6ntptuq. Quick hits. Empty stocking ends Thursday. With only 2 days to go in the 26th year of the Empty Stocking Fund, our goal of $100,000 won't be met without your help. Funds stay in Ector County to help needy families during the annual fundraising effort by the Odessa American and the Salvation Army. Funds go for a good holiday meal and small gifts under the tree. Donations to the Empty Stocking Fund can help families get small gifts for children and a food basket. The gifts will be handed out on Thursday, and we are down to the wire. Donations may be mailed or delivered to the Salvation Army Community Center, 810 East 11th Street, or the Odessa American, 700 North Grant, Suite 800. Zip codes for both are 79761. Call the Salvation Army at 332-0738. The Empty Stocking Fund was created by the Odessa American in 1995 and has raised more than $2 million. Donate online at tinyurl.com/bh5fjdz. Holiday Special. Lightwire Theaters, A Very Electric Christmas, supported by Odessa Arts, has been scheduled at 3:30 p.m. and at 7:30 p.m. Thursday at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 North Farm to Market, 1788, Midland. For tickets or information, visit www.wagnernoel.com. Free eye exam and glasses. Free eye exam and glasses for children grades 5 through 12 are being offered at 8 a.m. Sunday at Urias Eye Care, 2900 West Loop 250 North, Suite 165B, Midland, behind Abuelo's Restaurant. Family must be at or below poverty line in order to qualify. Limited spots available. Reservations are required. For reservations, text 432-226-0606 or email poolclionsclub@gmail.com. Christmas Eve Services. Crossroads. 6901 East State Highway 191 has scheduled Christmas Eve services at 2 p.m., 3:30 p.m., and 5 p.m. December 24th. West Odessa services will take place at 5 p.m. at the Headley Boys and Girls Club, 1476 North Knox. Visit www.crchurch.cc. Stonegate, 4240 Preston Smith Road, has scheduled Christmas Eve services at 3 p.m. and 4:30 p.m. December 24th. Tickets are limited. Visit tinyurl.com/y9ggmsja. Mission Dorado Baptist Church, 4142 Vaudrey Road has scheduled a candlelight Christmas Eve service at 5 p.m. December 24th. Visit tinyurl.com/yyjxu7n8. Kingdom Church, 3002 East University, has scheduled Christmas Eve services for 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. December 24th. There will be Christmas carol singing, hot cocoa, and cookie decorating. Child care will be limited, 0 to 2 years. Visit tinyurl.com/y3queuc5u. Connection Christian Church, 4241 Tanglewood Lane, has scheduled a drive-in Christmas Eve worship at 6 p.m. December 24th at the Church West parking lot. There will be carols, communion, and candlelight. Visit tinyurl.com/y50ta4jt. Refuge Ministries Wesley Campus, 1211 East 57th Street, has scheduled Christmas Eve services at 6 p.m. December 24th. This service is filled with scripture readings, prayer time, and candlelight, accompanied with Christmas songs. Cookies and hot chocolate will also be available. MCH reports 163rd, 164th COVID-19-related deaths. Medical Center Health System reported two more COVID-19-related deaths Tuesday. The first patient, a 53-year-old male, died Monday evening. The second patient, a 74-year-old female, also died Monday evening. The first patient was a resident of Ector County and was admitted to Medical Center Hospital on December 2nd. The second patient was a resident of Ector County and was admitted on December 14th. Both patients had pre-existing conditions and both families have been notified.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.